This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 28th of April 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. I'm your host, Tom Morris. In the second part of our Salone del Mobile series, we'll be revisiting what is still the world's prime design event. From revolutionary lighting to the latest collections from much-respected Italian brand, Milan was awash with all those who buy, sell, create and conceive new designs. Today, we'll be hearing from the CEO of leading lighting manufacturer Floss.
You look for where there is a potential for creativity, for poetry, for these things. So architectural lighting, where the dialogue with architecture can become something very interesting.
Plus, I caught up with Dutch designer Carol Bijings as her studio launches the rather lovely armchair designed for Italian firm Moroso.
The consumer these days is really looking for this unique personal experience. So if you use the textile, no sofa will ever be the same.
All that and much more besides, coming up today on the second part of our Salone series here on Section D on Monocle 24. You're listening to part two of our Salone series here on Section D on Monocle 24. Now, this year's event was illuminated by the lighting show Euroluce, which is held every 2 years during Salone. One of the most substantial stands at the fair was Italian brand Floss, who, after news last year that the family business had been bought by private equity company Invest Industrial, shone with new pieces by Jasper Morrison, Philippe Stark and Patricia Urquiola. They also presented pieces by Ares, an outdoor lighting company acquired by Floss this spring. Lots to discuss, and to do so, I joined Floss CEO Piero Gandini to find out how the light is still shining at one of our favourite Italian brands.
I took this decision for two main reasons. One, I wanted to not make my daughters and my nephews feel like hostages of my profession. And second, I wanted to oblige myself first and my close team, my partner, operative partners in the company, to go away from what my feeling was. We were in a kind of autopilot mode. We were having a lot of success, blah, 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 but I had the feeling that we were doing always the same discussion and doing always the same things. I turned 50 2 years ago. I was looking at myself and say, okay, now you can go on all your life doing the same thing in the same way, or you can do perhaps do the same thing with a different attitude. So when I met the Invest Industrial guys, I normally had a very bad feeling with private equity people. I'm not the kind of guy that normally likes these things, but at the same time there, I saw people, they are private equity because just they are, but their mentality and culture is also a lot very industrial. That's why they call themselves Invest Industrial. And when I share with Re Bonomi and his team what, in my opinion, supposed to be the future of the company, and they totally agree with that, the operation came naturally out. And this was, I think, a very good move because, as you know, we had just few products by chance in outdoor lighting. We never had a focused approach to the point. So I'm very happy. I think this is one of the steps that we will do because it's not the only one. When I share with the Invest Industrial team my idea of development of Floss, was at two phases. One was to consolidate our lighting business, and then we are very tempted to experience our design skills not only in lighting. So we will see.
And how does the acquisition of Ares sort of round out the total vision of Floss? I mean, you obviously work in the architectural fields, you work in residential lighting, you work in sort of high design, but outdoor, and it's sort of completing the entire picture of a lighting company.
Outdoor lighting has, in my opinion, it's like, in a certain sense, architectural lighting. It is very technical. There are a lot of technique and technology inside. Certain things are pretty mandatory, so you can't escape to perform in certain technical performances. At the same time, there is always this, what I'm looking like an angry dog always in my life. You look for where there is a potential for creativity, for poetry, for these things. So architectural lighting, where the dialogue with architecture can become something very interesting. And outdoor lighting is dialoguing with architecture, of course, because from the outside of the buildings, but also with nature. So it's even more intriguing in a certain sense. So I believe that we will push a lot, of course, confirming the technical side, as we always did. At the same time, we will bring into a company that is used to talk only about technique in a certain sense. We will bring to them also an approach to how to relate what you do and your performances in the dialogue with nature and outdoor architecture. And I think it's a very intriguing thing, and we can't wait to start, frankly speaking.
Yeah. And just going back to the introduction of the private equity firm, it must be such a huge pressure, especially as an Italian brand, this sort of sense of keeping in the family. Do you feel that actually this news development has actually shown a kind of becoming a bit more global, taking a really brave step, which many Italian companies have never done, and that they perhaps should have? To
this is interesting, because many people told me, you know, Piero, Floss was the last company we thought was going to be sold, because it was getting bigger and bigger, making a lot of money, you were a strong person inside. Why? I love the Italian family model, I think, company model, and I think there is a big potential in there still. At the same time, there is a very strong potential weakness. You have to take care. The companies are not that big. You are not talking about 3M or, you know, this kind of company. You're talking about companies that are relatively small. When you start to be in the second and third generation, the number of people in the family, because you have more generation, more sons, etc., started to become numerous. So you're not talking about one or two, but you're talking about 5, 6, 7, 8. And I always wonder how can be the 8 people in total harmony, they get into such organization, sharing. I am very jealous of people that are capable to do it. There are some examples, very nice ones. I'm totally not in that spirit. I think that you need a leadership. So if the leadership is recognized, fine. But that means that then you have one person doing the job or two persons with the job, and the other being, I can do luxury employees somehow. Or the leadership is not recognized, and then you have a war. In both cases, it was not the destiny that I was imagining for my daughters and my nephews. You know? I think they have to be free to go to do what they want, where they want. And if Floss is something that interests them, okay, they can get in. We are partnering the company, and to show things and to see if they're good. But not that, the family has this, I have to be there. I have to. Why?
So let's talk about a new lease of life here at the stand. Plenty of beautiful lights here on show. What I'd like to first ask is Michael Anastasiadi's collection 2 years ago at Euroluce, which is probably one of the highlights, I think, for most people. How do you follow that up? What have you got outside?
Perhaps because I'm dumb, probably. I don't put to myself so many questions. When I met Michael and we start working together, to me is all, you need two things, vision and talent. Vision, you know what you're going to do. Not going to do where you want to go in reality, with the company in general, where you want to be, how do you want to be placed. And then you need genuine, strong talent around you to do things. It's not easy. The point is to understand if it's a real talent or not. Sometimes people do very well one thing, and then they're not consistent in the time, you know, for many reasons. So this is the risky part. But when I smell the real one, the real talent, like Michael's case, for example, the last case you were mentioning, I feel perfectly safe. I mean, I don't have so many questions. We start, you present me things, the things are good. We rush into the development and we go to do it. And then we go on. We don't think, last year we were this. How can we going to confirm, or what are we going to? We don't do it. Just give me another drawing, and if it's nice, we go. I mean, don't make it too complicated. But to live like this, you need the fluidity of pure talent running.
Yeah.
And a very clear and direct dialogue between the company, me, and the designer.
That was me talking to the CEO of Floss, Piero Gandini, at Euroluce in Milan. Now, talking of Floss, it was 2 years ago exactly when the brand debuted its first collection with London-based designer Michael Anastasiades. The string lights, huge bulbs suspended from electrical cords that drew geometric shapes in a room, caused quite a stir. So all eyes were on Anastasiades this year to see how he'd follow them up. He presented a handful of new pieces for Floss, but it was at his own stand just across the way where I caught up with him to discuss the 15 new items he was presenting under his own brand name.
Here you can see first the big explosion of the mobile chandelier collection, which is a prominent feature here in the fair. It's a new direction from the earlier collection, which was much more linear. I would say a little bit more aggressive with the space. I think this introduction of the curves has allowed a lot of new possibilities. And what is great about it is I feel that they hold the space in a different way. So it's quite interesting. We've done 5 new mobiles, as you can see here, with different versions. And this is the first time also we decided to incorporate a wall-mounted fixture. And then a lot of the table lamps that you can see there, there's a lot of the 3 pieces that you see there rest to the top and somewhere in the middle. There's a play with the same element of the classical Weigenfeld cut sphere from the Bauhaus lamp, as everybody knows it. What is really nice about it is kind of the playfulness of it. It's a more of an homage to that kind of light that is so iconic. And for me, I like to make these references in my work. You have to also enjoy that process of being quite humorous with it as well at the same time. And here is the Happy Together family. So it's a simple sort of concept of actually piling up a stack of bulbs, or, you know, in the different configurations. So it becomes almost like a kind of a modular system. So you have the stack series and you have the berry series. Mm-hmm. So it's actually the exact opposite. What else have we got? This piece here, the table lamp. It's called On My Mind.
Yeah.
It's a balloon, it's a head. It's whatever you want it to be, really. So it's a head lying down for me. And then the bulb, which is a different shape. It goes away from the sphere. Actually, a lot of people got shocked about the idea that how on earth did you do another shape other than the sphere? But, you know, I think I've given the sphere enough attention, so it was interesting to see that departure in that way.
Let's talk, because 2 years ago when you presented, especially the collection with Floss, I mean, it was probably one of the most liked collections at Euroluce. Was there a lot of pressure this year for the follow-up?
Of course, there was a lot of pressure for the follow-up, but I was not concerned, because I think that when something is new, when something is fresh, of course, I was a new name for Floss at the time. It was my first collaboration in terms of industrial production, you know, with a big manufacturer. Floss is a big name. So, of course, there was a lot going on with just simply that entrance thing. So everybody became familiar, and over the last kind of 2 years with my name, with the amount of press that went around those collections, and you can't beat that in a sense. I mean, it's interesting though. I think that the 4 items that I created for Floss have an interesting strength to themselves. There's also this kind of a subtleness to it and subtlety to it that is important to appreciate that way, rather than just this boom, this kind of force that you came in with the string lights at that time.
How is it different when you're designing your own collection, as we're here now, to when you're designing a collection for a manufacturer like Floss? Do you have the same amount of creativity and playfulness with it, or do you find a bit more pressure when you're working with a big brand?
I don't see any difference. I don't differentiate between my own collection and the Floss collection. For me, when I created my brand, my company, was to create a platform to be able to achieve this level of freedom of producing things and getting things out and into the market without even having to actually start knocking or approaching manufacturers or trying to convince people about my ideas. You know, I was convinced about the ideas myself, so I thought that the only way for me to get the products out is to actually make them. So there's also an amazing sense of responsibility there, that, you know, you stand behind your products, we believe in your ideas, you invest your own money in those ideas. And when the collaboration with Floss came, of course it was incredibly flattering. You know, I grew up in a small place in Cyprus, we had a limited exposure to international design. And then all of a sudden, you know, that kind of childhood memory of going to the Floss agent in Cyprus and looking at those lights and admiring all these beautiful Castiglione lights. And it was something that Floss as a company was something I always looked up to. And so when that collaboration came up, it was amazing for me. I was really flattered by their appreciation towards what it was that they saw in me. But obviously, they provided me with the right platform to extend or even, you know, explore my creativity in a different way. I mean, some of the objects were quite technological, especially, you know, if you look at the string light, you know, the collection we showed 2 years ago, and, you know, I couldn't think of anybody else to do it with better than them. So it's nice because we have a very fluid relationship right now, and for me they're complementary, so I don't see any clash, and I don't differentiate between my products or the Floss products. For me it's the same family, they could coexist, they could be in the same room.
Now, Iriluce, it happens every 2 years, it's the biggest gathering of the world's lighting industry. When you come here, obviously you spend a lot of time in your own stand, do you kind of wander around and see what else is happening in the lighting industry? Do you look for whether it's trends or look to your...
I always try to do it. I always try to kind of make some time to actually see what is around. It's very difficult to see it at the beginning of the fair. I usually allow it towards the end of the week. People are much more calm as well. You know, there's more time to also talk to the people from the other stands. I've seen very, very little, unfortunately, only in the proximity of my own stand and Floss. So it's very, very hard to say what my response is to the whole fair. And especially I've only stuck in Hall 13, so I would need to kind of move around a little bit and also try to catch some of the exciting shows that are going on in the city.
And talking about those kind of in general, sort of design week generally here in Milan, do you go around and you're kind of looking for inspiration? I mean, it must be a real sort of a wealth of things to look to inspire what you'll do next and what we'll be seeing in 2 years.
It's amazing. It's an amazing place to be. It's amazing to get all these creative people at the same time in one place, you know, showing off their best, really. And it's important to be able to find the time to actually, you know, catch some of that. And there's great ideas. But the great thing is that there's also incredible coverage, you know, especially with the internet. You know, it's just go on online and you see all these great things. So at least you sort of, even you're physically in the same place, you feel like you've seen them, even if you don't actually have the time to go and see them there.
That was London-based, Cypriot-born lighting designer Michael Anastasiades talking to me there at Iriluce in Milan.
In our finely tuned May issue, you'll discover our design directory, putting the spotlight on the best in architecture, furniture, and retail. If you like your arm candy well built, this is the issue for you. But there's so much more.
In the affairs section, we head to Fort McMurray, the Canadian oil boom town that's trying not to go bust. Now the oil price has crashed.
In the business section this month, we're in Tehran to take a look at the Iranian capital's burgeoning retail scene. With many feeling sanctions will be lifted imminently, there's a sense of optimism and opportunity for investors here.
In the culture section, we profile Curzon's director's cut of London's cherished Renoir cinema. Amazing architecture and a discussion of the future of the cinema abound. The May issue of Monocle is on all well-stocked newsstands now. Or treat yourself to a subscription. Visit monocle.com to find out how.
You're listening to part two of our Salone series here on Section D with me, Tom Morris. Now, Italian manufacturer Moroso has long been known for creating a stir with its colourful, cacophonous collections of furniture by the likes of Ron Arad, Patricia Urquiola and Antonio Citterio. This year, that roster got even larger with new collaborations with David Adje, his second piece of furniture, Nendo and Scholten and Beijings. The Dutch studio presented a new armchair for Moroso called Ottoman, which makes use of the colourful prints they're known for. I sat down with Carol Beijings to discuss all.
We started designing the textile first. So we designed Rocks and Grids. It was a question of Michael Meharam from Meharam. He asked us to design a new colour blocking, rethink colour blocking. So we made a lot of samples by hand, stitching, colouring, made new compositions, and then studied how long the repeat should be to upholster a sofa, 2.5, 3-seater, without having any repeat. So we have a 9-meter repeat. That's very special because normally in textile it's like 1.5 meter, 1 meter, 2. But we really didn't want this repeat in one piece because we know that the consumer these days is really looking for this unique personal experience, but in a mass-produced product, because, you know, we all don't like to pay for the limited edition anymore. But yeah, we like this personal touch. So if you use the textile, no sofa will ever be the same. In the grid textile, we worked with the density of the grid. So if it's smaller, so the lines are closer together, one of the two colors stands out more. Yeah, it almost seems like the color is lighting up on some parts of the textile. You know, if it's, for example, the yellow block, then it still exists of different kind of yellows, but also soft grays or different colorings.
You must get invited to work with a lot of manufacturers all the time. And I know you're sort of working with a lot of Italian ones this year for the first time. How do you go about kind of selecting what you want to do? And actually, more to the point, what brands and manufacturers work with your typology of design? Is it a difficult editing process?
Well, because we work a lot with color and detailing, you do need companies that appreciate that and want to invest more time in research and studying on the piece. Applying a color is quite difficult. And for us, it's never an afterthought. It's in the process from the beginning. We think in color. And so Marosa is one of these companies like Maharam that is into that. You know, you see it here in the whole collection.
Yeah. So we are in a sort of quite technical stand at the moment.
Yeah, and it fits perfectly. And, you know, we've been dancing for a while, and now it just came about really quickly.
But the piece does very much look like it's been designed by you. It's, you know, the colour, the layering, it's identified by your studio. How do you sort of work with a manufacturer to sort of make sure the piece looks Moroso, but then also looks like it's been designed by you? Is that a kind of fine balance?
It always is. Well, in this case, the piece was there and the story, and it fit perfectly in the Moroso collection. But in general, we always study the DNA of the company and the history, because we think that's very interesting and also always very inspiring for us. And then, because this was really about upholstering and, you know, it's their speciality. So in that sense, it fits very well. You know, people always like to have a little bit of our handwriting, or, you know, the same as what we did, but then, of course, new and different. So we always sort of reuse our handwriting or what we've done before, but then make sure it's unique in the new piece.
I mean, obviously, I know it's a lot of work, but you must get time to sort of get out and about by yourself and look around. What do you always head for?
Well, I think people should go and visit Villa Necchi. It's the oldest freestanding villa in Milan, with a beautiful garden and a swimming pool. You've been there?
Yes.
Well, it's especially in this week, full of designs. It's so nice to have a drink in the garden and, you know, see the house. And we always like Rosanna because it's very charming, and you have upcoming designers and, you know, established ones, and it's this sort of crazy mess.
That's kind of what it should be about, really, isn't it? I think when you're in the fiera up here, you kind of forget that. The charming world of the design.
Go there, have a nice lunch or, you know, a drink, and enjoy design and talk to people.
That was Carol Beijings, one half of Scholten and Beijings, talking to me there at the Moroso stand at Salone del Mobile in Milan earlier this month. Now, elsewhere in the Fuori Salone, British designer Lee Broom launched a new collection of 20-plus products in a made-for-purpose department store-inspired space. Monocle's Josh Fennett caught up with Lee to discuss his envelope-pushing exhibition and the enduring importance of the Milan-based design fair.
It's a series of storefronts that we've basically knocked through to create one department store on two floors. And the idea that it's not a direct recreation of a department store, it's like a kind of cinematic pastiche of one. So everything is blown out in grey, except for the actual products that I've designed, which are all in their original materials or the colourways that we've created them in. And there's around 25 new pieces in the collection, so it's a big collection and it covers over two floors, from furniture, lighting, accessories.
So there's a characteristic kind of Librium boldness to it, but also I hope I'm right in saying there's also a kind of a subtleness to it, lots of, you know, shiny, lots of colours and glass. And I was wondering if you could tell me the sort of inspiration behind the collection itself and what you were, you know, how you were feeling when you created the pieces.
Yeah, it's almost like a collection of sort of 10 mini collections within one. And I was working on them all at different times over the past 18 months and kind of building up mood boards and colourways for each piece and shapes. And I started to realise that the collections were coming quite diverse and quite different, such as stained glass, working in steel, working in acrylic, and then also revisiting things that I'm known for, such as new crystalware, marble and carpet pieces. And then kind of threading them together like a sort of journey, like a little story. So the first piece and the very last piece are completely different, but they all link from one to the other as you walk through the store.
And so, as people will probably hear with the Vespas scooting by and their car engines, we're standing on the streets of Milan. I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about how important it is to yourself as a designer, but also, you know, to the industry for you to be here and really show off your wares and be part of kind of Salone and come to Milan to do it.
Yeah, I mean, as a designer, I obviously design and manufacture and retail my own products to our retailers across the world. And it's important for us as a brand to have a kind of world stage to promote that on. And although we have exhibited in other design weeks, Milan really is the one place where everybody internationally comes together. So it enables you to put on a real performance, a real sort of spectacle, if you like. So there is, of course, a commercial angle to it as a business person, but from a design point of view as well, it allows me to kind of create something very artistic and kind of really display where I am as a designer right now.
And finally, I wonder if you could identify a single piece, or perhaps you mentioned 10 mini collections, a certain series of pieces that you think sum up your collection for this year, and then maybe a little bit about them, perhaps where they're made and, you know, something that we can...
Sure. 80% of the collection is made in the UK. There are pieces such as the crystal items made in the Czech Republic and the marble that's made in Italy. One of the pieces that was the first piece that I created, called the Crescent Light, kind of is a sort of theme which runs throughout some of the other pieces in the collection. It's a sort of classic Art Deco globe light, you might say. It's sliced asymmetrically down the middle and the light slipped to reveal this sort of brass fascia. So it's that idea of taking something that we've all seen before and just giving it a very simple twist and presenting it in a different way. So when you kind of see it, you sort of already have a familiarity with it, but you've not quite seen it in that way. And I think that's synonymous with pieces that I've done in the past, such as the crystal bowl, putting two things together in a different way, but it's less decorative this time, and I think it's more about the silhouette and more about the sculpture and more about sort of simple materials.
That was Monocle's Josh Fennett talking to British designer Lee Broom during Salone. And that brings us to the end of today's edition of Section D, this second part of our Salone series. Today's show is produced by David Pleasant and edited by Alex Funnell. You can contact the producer David at dmp@monocle.com if you'd like to feature on the show or if you have any comments or questions. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.